Hello, everyone. Welcome back to If Plants Could Talk. This is Garrett. I'm your host. This conversation took place on December 13th, 2023, with my very special guest, Tate of Green Minded. Tate joined me virtually today from his greenhouse that he operates over at Front Range Gardens in the Denver, Colorado area. He is the head grower there at Front Range Gardens and has been growing and working with plants for, I think he said, near 15 years. We got to have a pretty extensive tour of the greenhouse over there that he's operating, and it was very impressive. So if you are just listening, you may want to head over to either YouTube or Spotify to see the video option. We spent about a half an hour doing a tour. So I really hope you guys enjoy and you learned something, because I definitely did. I want to take a moment to tell you guys about my sponsors and partnerships. If you scroll down into the description of this episode, you will find links to Mezcala Nursery, located in Long Beach, California. Green Touch Nursery, located in Bellflower, California. Big shout out to Plantly.io. You can type in Plantly.io into your web browser or download the free Plantly app on Android or iOS. If you are interested in becoming a vendor, I have provided the link for you to do so down in the description. Real Mushrooms is a mushroom supplement company offering hot water extracts in both powder and capsule form. You may be familiar with all of these wonderful mushrooms and their amazing health benefits like lion's mane, chaga, reishi, shiitake, maitake, cordyceps. All these mushrooms that have been used in Chinese herbal medicine for thousands of years. If you're ready to make a purchase, you can use code IFPLANTSCOULDTALK at checkout or click the link in the description and you will get 10% off your order. Next up is PlantWave. PlantWave is a device that translates the electrical frequencies and patterns that your plant creates. In other words, the water moving through your plant is then translated into, wait. In other words, the water moving through your plant creates an electrical frequency, and that is then translated into sound and melodies using the PlantWave app and the PlantWave device. You hook up two electrodes to the leaf of your plant. They even have the little sticky electrodes that you could put perhaps onto your cactus, and you can load different sound packs into the PlantWave device and tune out of the world and into your plants. If you're ready to make a purchase, there is no code necessary. Just click the link in the description and you will get $15 off your order. Last but not least is Bad Goose Botanicals. Bad Goose Botanicals is offering a supplement powder that is a nootropic, and Flow State is one of their products that I'm thinking of right now, and it is made out of lion's mane, ginseng, and Mitragyna speciosa. If you are not familiar with Mitragyna speciosa, it is a cousin to the coffee plant and is very stimulating and can help with elevating your mood and boosting your energy, along with those other ingredients that are in that particular product. I can't recommend them enough. If you're looking for focus and hyperdrive and flow state, definitely go to Bad Goose Botanicals. They also have Green Mang Da, just kratom by itself, and different recipes that you can mix the drinks into. They've provided these on their website. You can make mocktails. It's a great alternative to things like alcohol. If you're trying to, you know, take the healthy plant route, then head over to Bad Goose Botanicals. You can use code IFPLANTSCOULDTALK at checkout or use the link and you will get 15% off your order. All right. Merry Christmas, everyone. Happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa, whatever it is that you celebrate. Thank you for being with me here this winter. Is it winter now? It's winter now, and it feels good to be back. I love you all very much. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Enjoy. Here's Tate. All right. Tate, welcome to If Plants Could Talk.
Thanks for having me, Garrett.
It's my pleasure. The listeners don't know this, but we did this once before, and we're giving it another shot.
Second time's the charm, right?
Yes. Pretend I know nothing about you, man. But how are that was awkward. How are you today?
I'm doing really well. I'm just putzing around the greenhouse trying to get stuff ready to go for the spring season. Dividing up plants and repotting seedlings today. So it's been a nice calm day in the greenhouse. It's our down time of the year, so it's a good time for me to get all these weird little projects done, greenhouse cleaning, all that kind of stuff.
Does some part of you go dormant during the winter?
No,
you're working, huh? You're working around the clock.
Always working. You know, in Colorado too, we got winter season coming up, so it doesn't ever stop here.
Yeah, How do you have to go through any climate changes? Like, how are you keeping the plants? How do the plants survive the winter?
I've got two heaters in my greenhouse. It's set to a low of like the low 60s in this one. Eventually, I like to get a second one that will go a little bit colder and be able to have some different plants in there. Not everything goes into dormancy with this temperature. So sometimes I have to play some microclimates. And if I know something wants to get cold, I'll just put it up against the wall in a different area of the greenhouse. And so then I can usually drop it about 10 degrees or so.
Wow, that's complicated. So, like, how many different kinds of climates, like, I don't know the right terminology for this, but how many different kinds of needs do your plants have in there? Like, how diverse is it in there?
Well, it's very diverse. I have everything in here from aroids and Hoya, which you can see behind me. I have a misting house with propagations that I'm working with, and then I do cactus and succulents. And the other end of the greenhouse, I have it kind of divided up by humidity. And so all my foliage and jungle plants, if you will, are all together, and that way they're kind of on the similar watering schedule. And then I have everything that is more arid leaning, if you will, over on a different side of the greenhouse. And then that kind of helps me to just simplify things. I like to keep my plants in groupings based off of what they need, so then I can kind of take care of everything all at once.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to blanket water 10 benches rather than, you know, spot water different plants. So if I can have stuff strategically grouped, then it makes my life a little easier.
I think you explained to me the last time we talked that you hand water everything, right?
I do, yeah. Except in my misting house right now, that's set to go for like 20 minutes twice in the afternoon. That's basically just to keep it humid in there, keep that coca core and perlite mix, and then my pumice and perlite mix for the other stuff all wet, but not so that I have to water it every day.
And your position is head grower, right?
Correct. Yeah, I do all the growing for Front Range Gardens, which is the retail garden center. We are in Westminster, Colorado. And then I do the specialty plant buying for them. I don't really like calling them the rare plants, but colloquially, that's probably the easiest way to describe what kind of sector I'm doing that purchasing for. That involves meeting specialty growers and going out there, bringing the plants back to Colorado for our different shows and sales that we do. Right now we're getting stuff from Florida. We got stuff from Arizona, California. Did an import from Ecuador here a few months back. So got a lot of plants from everywhere.
That's a lot of responsibility for one person.
It is. It's fun though. I really love being able to work with all these different plants, and then being able to connect it to customers and collectors who then get to take this stuff home and enjoy it every day.
I imagine, are you able to keep track of like trends in the plant market?
You can. There's journals and magazines that do that. They'll kind of track what's been hot in the garden centers. I'm pretty active on Instagram, at least through scrolling and keeping tabs on what people are posting, what I see a lot of. And so that definitely influences what I'm buying for the company.
And so you're traveling often to these other growers?
Occasionally. Yeah, this last summer I went down to Arizona and California visited a bunch of people, met some new connections. And yeah, that was really cool. In January, I was in the Tampa area for TPIE, which is a plant expo centers. But we got to connect with some of the bigger growers down there. So that was nice.
Sweet, man. And what brought you to plants originally?
So I grew up in South Dakota and I spent a lot of time on the farm with my grandparents. My parents would drop me off there for the weekend when they needed to escape me. And so I'd always spend time out there with grandmas and helping out there. That was kind of my first exposure to it. And then I had dropped out of college my freshman first semester after that was done. I was originally going to school for history. And then the following new school year start in the fall, I had switched to the state agriculture school. And I didn't switch there intentionally to go for horticulture, but I remember I was looking through the class catalog one night and I finally got to the horticulture section after getting through math and English and all the other boring degrees that I wouldn't have any fun doing. I started reading the class descriptions and it was like plant propagation and tree identification and insect biology. And I just thought to myself, wow, this sounds like it could be interesting. And so took a couple classes and that was it. So that was about 13 years ago when I first started college, and I've been involved in the industry, whether it's school or work at like a garden center or a wholesale grower or this job now. I've been involved with the industry and working and learning. So this has been really all I know as an adult.
And so you're spending most of the plants you cultivate are at for work, right? You don't have like a vast collection of your personal at home.
I have some plants at home. When you have as extensive a collection as I'm working with right now, it kind of all blends together.
Sure.
I have plants at home that will eventually get propagated and then they'll come back to work and they'll get sold. So they're kind of just placeholders, just enjoying them for the time. Most of it is stuff that I have multiples of in the greenhouse already. So it's basically just chilling. But yeah, everything I propagate is really for Front Range. And then we're starting to do some stuff with the wholesale side of things. It's called the Emerald Leaf. And then we're selling to 10, I believe, surrounding states. So like all the garden centers and flower shops, stuff like that. So I'm starting to work on getting availabilities put together for those type of customers also.
That's great that you can just foster whatever plant you feel like and kind of diversify your collection, maybe even impress some girl. You're like, you know, she's into spotted begonia, so I brought one home today.
There you go. I'll have to remember that for next time. Maybe I can find one that likes frankincense trees.
Yeah, dude. I know you've got a vast collection of those going over there.
Yeah, that whole family is really cool. The Bursaceae, so that's the Bursera, which are from North America. Those produce copal resin.
Oh, wow.
And then you have the myrrh trees, Camphora, which go from Southern Africa around the eastern coast up into Arabia and Central Asia. There's some that grow even over into Pakistan. That's a pretty big genus of plants. And then you have frankincense, which is Boswellia. Those will grow kind of like in the Horn of Africa, Somalia, Ethiopia, up on Socotra Island is their biological hotspot. There's a lot of really cool plants that grow on that island. And then there's some other stuff into the Arabian Peninsula. And it's been, I had found a research nursery by accident. I had bought a Bursera tree from a nursery, and then they had the stick tag for this research nursery that was in the United States. And so that started this whole rabbit hole. They're such cool trees, how old they are, when people are harvesting them. There's some pretty incredible habitats they grow in too.
How big do they get?
Like a myrrh tree, like Camphora myrrha, those will get 20, 30 feet, but they're years old. I don't know that they're quite as old as like a bristlecone pine, but they're, you see one of these mature plants in habitat, like a big one, and you know that it's seen a lot of years.
Bristlecone pine is like in California, right? Like Methuselah, the oldest tree in the world.
Yeah.
The ancient forest.
Yeah. Yeah. We have some in Colorado too.
Do you?
Yeah. Going up to Mount Blue Sky. It was just renamed from Mount Evans this past summer. So I'm trying to use the updated correct name now, but going up there, and then Denver Botanic Garden has public gardens called, it's like Goliath Botanic Garden, Mount Goliath, I think. And they have a stand of them up there. But the ones in Colorado, I don't think are quite as old as the ones in California, but they're still hundreds to 1,000 years old, I would say.
That's one of the earliest Google searches I ever did, was to find out where the oldest tree in the world is. And then like, they don't disclose the exact location, but I would love if somebody knew, like some kind of science dork knew where it was and could take me there. That would be a dream.
Yeah.
Methuselah is the name incredible. Of the tree.
Even just to, I think they don't want people getting real close to them.
Right.
And walking on the root zone. That's my understanding. But even just to be able to see them from 100 yards away.
Sure. Yeah.
Would be incredible.
Yeah.
The hike up there and then, you know, probably walk over some clearing and then there they are. Would be incredible.
So the Bursera and the Boswellia, is that a challenging plant to grow for like a normal everyday novice grower?
I think if you live in California or Arizona, you know, somewhere where you're not going to get a hard freeze, they're pretty easy. You know, and it's all just kind of depends on how much you want to mimic habitat too. If you have dry area, you probably wouldn't want to grow any of the tropical Bursera. Like Palo Santo is a little more tropical species. And so any of those ones with like the real fuzzy leaves, that's usually a good indicator. And those maybe wouldn't do quite as well. I sometimes run into spider mite issues with those, having low humidity here. But I find that once you get the hang of it and figure out what the root system's like, then they're fairly easy. I've found the frankincense like more water, but in a really small pot, versus having a lot of root run. But then there's other ones where I've been putting them in a really big pot and then they just explode. And I get lots of cuttings that I can take to start smaller plants. So it's, you know, it's just figuring out the different, the different plants. They're all a little bit different, but that's fun of it.
Sure. And Mexico has their own frankincense too, right? Right? Frankincense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Copal.
Is that what that is? Okay.
Yeah, that would be from one.
Mexican frankincense is what they called it when I
purchased it. Yeah, the Bursera phagaroides.
Phagaroides, that's what it was. Yeah, I'll never forget now.
Shaped like the beach leaf is what the name means.
Yeah, so that's
Phagus
cool.
So is the genus for beach, and then oides at the end of that scientific name refers to. It's like similar to, and so that refers to the leaf structure.
Go ahead, please.
I was going to say there's the Procera phagoroides isn't really even the legendary copal source. That's Procera copalifera, which grows a little further down in Mexico.
Okay.
Into like Central America, if I'm remembering correctly.
And so how do they extract? Is it the sap of the tree that they're using to make those resins?
Yeah. Yeah. They basically just hack a chunk out of the bark and it bleeds. They let it dry and then they'll go back and scoop it off. And there's different grades of the resins. And then based off of like certain habitats will supposedly produce a higher quality, and then different species will produce different qualities of resins too. I chopped back a bunch of my Procera phagoroides and then I scraped off all the copal off the wounds and then burned that in my greenhouse the other day.
That's awesome.
It was a very wonderful 45 seconds.
Yeah, I love the smell, man.
It's so nice.
Yeah.
So nice.
That's fascinating to me because I burn a lot of resin on charcoal and I never really stop to think about too much about where it comes from. So that's cool.
Thank you. It makes you appreciate it a lot more.
Right. What about dragon's blood? Are you familiar with the dragon's blood tree?
Yeah, that's a type of Dracaena that grows on Socotra. That's the big like candelabra shaped one.
Yeah, it's cool looking. It almost looks like aloe leaves on top or something like a Hercules or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are cool plants too. I love going out to California and driving through the nurseries and you see all the big crated overgrown tree aloes and like, you know, they need a crane just to move it. And man, to get one of those in your yard would be sick.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, I've become really limited on like what I can grow here because I'm at a higher elevation now. It gets into the 30s and it's just like I haven't even really experimented. I haven't been really caring for my plants in the way that I would like to because I haven't been caring for myself. But anyways, I want to this spring hopefully catch back on fire for the plants and kind of experiment and, you know, see what I can do and what I can't do.
That's the nice thing about them is they're always there.
Yes,
when you're ready for it.
They'll wait for you.
Yeah, yeah. There's always somebody with plants for you. So
yeah, man, absolutely. That's cool. So, what do you have? I know you're engaged in like cactus and succulent societies, but do you have like a primary plant that you really care for or that you feel connected to, or is it just kind of all over?
It's whatever I'm interested at the time. It switches from day to day. It's not realistic for me to specialize and to be, because I still, at the end of the day, I'm, as much as I love growing these plants, I'm still running a business or treating what I'm doing as its business. And so I want to make sure that what I'm doing is profitable. And so that allows me to have this giant diversity because that's just what works in the market that I'm in.
Yeah.
With being at the garden center, there's just, we have such a vast clientele of different interests, especially in Denver. I mean, you can grow anything here with, you put a humidifier in your living room, you can grow all the aeroids you want. You can have anthurium. If you have a good south-facing window in your apartment, you can have cactus and succulents.
Wow.
Put stuff a couple feet away, and then you've got a little bit lower light. So we're really blessed with that aspect, the quality of light we have here. And like our winters aren't really that extreme. It freezes, but when it freezes hard, it's really not for that long. So that makes it a little bit easier. But that just facilitates more opportunity to grow different things and figure out what works here. There's a lot of stuff that I've given up on growing because I just haven't had good luck with it. And then I tweak one little thing and then, oh, all of a sudden I can do this well again. So it's nice that you can do pretty much whatever you want with just a little bit of forethought.
Yeah, man, that's great. And what a blessing to have a space like that. How many greenhouses do you guys have on that property?
So our main greenhouse with the wholesale and retail side is 35,000 square feet.
Shit.
We also have, so that's just a little bit under an acre, about two-thirds of an acre. And then on this property, we have my greenhouse that I'm in right now. This is about 3,000 square feet. There are three more greenhouses to the north of me that are the same size. There's half of a pole barn that's been converted into a greenhouse, and then a cold frame to the north of that. That's all being occupied by a mail order rose company called High Country Roses. Give them a plug too. Cool. They're on site, so if you're into roses for your yard, make sure to hit them up. But yeah, we've got a lot of greenhouse space on here and more room to expand and do other things. There's a full service nursery with Front Range Gardens too, so it's a pretty good size operation.
So what all do you got going on in there? I know you gave me kind of a brief rundown, but what are you growing in there?
Well, I'll probably just show you. That might be easier.
Sure.
Let's see. What else can I play around? All right. So this is the ficus bench. We've got probably like six different species on here. A lot of these I'm propagating from air layering. That's been working pretty well for me. Up here, I've got some staghorn ferns and all of these epiphytic cactus going down the road there. Nice millennial zoom for you. I grew all these from seed. That was one of the first things I started here.
I love epiphyllum.
We've got Hoya all on this bench. This is all anthurium. I've got some over here that I'm starting to hybridize. So I put a little tag on the flower to know which pollen I put on there. Got the albos because who doesn't love a good albo monstera?
Of course.
They'll never go out of style. Thai constellations may be cheap now, but the albos will probably continue to hold a good value. But I got all anthurium and aroids back over here, philodendron. I've got sansevieria on this bench. Went and got, this is like that Bainesiana, that Grigsby Cactus Gardens clone. So they're going to probably not be around a whole lot longer. So it's cool having that kind of a historical clone. We've got some sansevieria. I grew this one and then this row back all from seed. It's pretty cool to see.
Righteous.
The difference in them. You know, all, I think the correct term for them is that they're grexes, all like different seeds out of the same seed pod. So here's some seed there. Can't really, kind of blurry. See if I can clean my filthy camera off. I have clay dust on the back.
It does look better.
Maybe a little better.
Yeah.
And then we're kind of getting into the arid plants. We got some Dioscorea here, nice big guys. I've got some that I started from seed. I got from Charlie.
Cool. Shout out to Charlie.
Pretty exciting. Yeah, Charlie sucks. We've got some Uncarina here, Pseudobombax ellipticum. Got this guy from an old collector. Not really sure on the history of that. I've had a couple of people comment on it, but you know, these old plants that the collectors have need to be cared for as well. So I'll use that for when it flowers. I'll try to get some seed off of it.
Cool.
And mess around there. I've got these guys that are all seed grown. And then this one's been really heavily pruned. So I'm hoping in time we can start to mimic that look. Because that's really what the people want. If you put them in the landscape, they tend to just look like regular trees. There's
Give them
one
what they want.
Yeah, they want the fat bottoms, right?
Me too.
I got some pelargonium here, Tylacoidon, duds. I really like the Fucheria, the Boojum, and the Ocotillo. They're a really cool group of plants. There's the Perpusii there.
Can you tell me the locality of that? That group of plants?
They're Mexico. So Perpusii is Oaxaca. And then, like, this guy is called Naris, the Boojum. Those will grow up into Arizona, Tucson, Phoenix area. And then I've got some little Ocotillo here. You can even find those in California, Arizona.
The dead stick plant? Is that the dead stick plant? No.
No.
It looks like it, though. It's spikier,
right
though.
Right now they do. Yeah, they're really cool when they are blooming. You'll have to look up the flowers. They're all hummingbird pollinated too. So
oh, interesting.
Everything that's hummingbird pollinated is always really cool. I've got some adenium here, various species, getting into aloes. I got a bunch of these Erinaceae, but as you can see, you got a little aloe mite gall that I'm struggling with. So I've heard that you can, if you keep growing them out and you treat for the mite, that they'll come out of it, but I don't know, we'll see. Kumara, there's the Areocarpus collection.
Sick.
I really like them, but they're just so expensive. They just
haven't the rutusis kind of come down a little bit, maybe like non-cultivar.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that are growing them from seed now.
Yeah.
So you can get seedlings for usually under $25. Here we're getting over. I got some cycads. You know, we're going to knock over. Here's my Welwitschia.
Nice.
Joe Wujek pot. I love like the petroglyph look.
Love
I knew
that.
When I found this pot, I wanted a welly in there. And then I've been, you track the growth. So this is the growth point here. And so you start mark it at the beginning of the month and then you can track it. So this is when I first potted it, 2 months later, 2 months later.
Wow, rather quickly, actually.
Yeah, I'm really surprised at how fast they've grown. I've got caught the mesem bug this year.
Nice.
I've got a bunch of lithops. They're so much cooler when you stage them up versus when you have them like this.
Sure.
You know, it's like they're kind of just a butt in a pot. And there's not, they're just unappealing like that.
It's like, you know what it reminds me of? Ace Ventura coming out of the elephant.
Yes. Yes. You can see probably this guy right here.
Yeah. He's like, argh.
I've got Pseudocarpa, which is a pretty hard to find pachycaul tree. You got the Pachycormus right here. These guys are so sick. You got this one from Peter W. Off the auction at the CSSA show in Colorado this year. And that's the Viciana variety that grows in Cedros Island.
Mm.
And then here's the regular one. They use an acid in their root tips to dissolve rock that they grow into, and then they'll split it open.
What?
They're pretty badass.
That's a sick adaptation.
They got the Sifos. Shout out to Petra for leaving all these with me. If anybody needs some Sifostemma, Jutai, Karorii, hit me up, please. I don't want all these. Here we're getting into the Bursera. So this big guy up front, this is Bursera Sima rubra. That one grows down in Florida. Kinziana, Schlechtenthalii. Here's that, the one tree that started it all. This is the Bursera palmeri. And then this came originally out of Miniature Garden, which is Jason Alsamier's project that he had started a while back. He's kind of like the expert in the United States on this, on the Burseraceae family.
Cool.
And then there's some other cool, very knowledgeable people like Louie at Sacred Grove Oceanside. I just got some Commiphora mira seeds from him about a month ago that just popped. I don't have my seed house, or those seeds aren't over here, but here's some Bursera phagoroides. We've got the microphylla, which grows in Mexico up in Arizona. And then these back here are the Waterman form that they think it's like a prehistoric hybrid maybe that grew in the Waterman Mountains of Arizona. Here's the frankincense, regular sacra right here. Finding these guys are kind of prone to whitefly. So that's one thing to keep in mind with them. Here's Boswellia elongata. The pot my friend made. We've got the Basilia Mexicana. And that's kind of like the prototype for that family, the first thing that evolved. So that's
cool.
Like a prehistoric frankincense, basically. Bunch of frankincense seedlings here. Got Kapok, the floss silk trees. They got these wicked spines on them. They get really pretty flowers. So I'm a big fan of the pachycaul trees.
I see that.
Any of those like like succulent type ones. They're, I think that's probably my favorite group. Here we're getting into the myrrh, the Commiphora. We got K-Taff, Simplicifolia. This pot that I made, one of the first ones. We got some other cool ones, like here's the foliage on Caperonii. And it's got these nice little red dots on the the bottom of the leaflets there.
Yeah.
Kua, so the Arabian myrrh, Angolensis. And then it's got this really cool twist on the trunk there.
Wow.
Pot by my friend Andrew at Sulci Pots. Really talented. Honestly, I think he's probably one of the best potters in Denver. Very, his attention to detail is really incredible. He's got a lot of nice stuff. Some Adenia, Pachypodium here. I've got a good chunk of the species. This is probably like the first caudiciform group of plants I got and really got into by Spinosum. Here's some of the flowers on them.
Cool.
Got a bunch of little Revocaulae in 2.5-inch pot. So I started these actually from small seedlings. Let's see if I can find one. Here's one. They started like this size. They're in a 3.5-inch pot. And then I put them in the bed for a couple months, and then they blew up to about this size. Now I'm down potting them for the winter because they're not going to do a whole lot, so I don't want to have them be sitting wet, but that will help get them all rooted in here, and then they'll start to force more energy up into the caudex.
Cool.
Got the the boob farm.
Nice.
Everybody loves these.
Everyone loves a good boob.
You never go wrong.
Yeah.
Got some agave back there. Yeah, got nice little sections of plants that all kind of have the same general watering regimen. That way then I can just kind of buzz through here real quick. Take into my propagation tent.
Oh, rad.
So here we have some all Hoya in here. We got some cool stuff. Like this is Hoya imbricata.
Wow.
So they'll kind of like they get like a taco shape, and then they will get bigger like this, and then they start to grow and shingle up the sides, and then they'll kind of like the pads will almost like stack on each other like fish scales.
Radical.
But I just set this up basically with painter's plastic. It's like some thicker stuff. And then I've got some, I think this is plumbing PVC tubes. And then I just took a patio misting line and ran it in here. I've got it all hooked to a timer.
Right.
We got like some syngonium in back, more Hoya in here. This is all like Bursaceae cuttings. There's some Fucaria. Got these Scindapsis from a local guy. Here's that that snake scale one. It's kind of like a shingling type, and then they get these like little, almost like bumps.
Whoa, like a toad.
Yeah, they got, so that's Black Mamba, and then Snake Skin, and then I got some weird little Sport Variegated ones, Strawberry Shakes. And then I'm just working on getting this next side all filled up. I can fit about 1,000 of this 2-inch size.
Nice.
On a bench. So that's trying. I mean, you can't fit full trays in there of everything. You have to space some of it out, but yeah.
It's like a plant amusement park, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Seriously, I really feel like people really enjoy this because it's so diverse. And it's got your touch on it. I can tell you it's got your touch on it.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm very proud of it.
So you've been doing some pottery too. I've been noticing.
I have, yeah. I was gonna walk over there and pull those out next to my little station here. This came out of my last batch.
Dude, I love the texture and the colors. Sick.
Here's another one.
Nice, man. What's the name? What's the name of the pottery? What's the pottery handle? What are you calling it?
I'm probably just gonna stick with Green Minded.
Green Minded Pottery. Pottery. Green Minded. Green Minded Pottery.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
I've had this Instagram handle for over 10 years now, so might as well keep with it. I think it's fitting. It's funny, it started as a weed joke, and I don't even grow weed.
Oh, never? You were never a cannabis cultivator?
I've grown one plant in my life, and it's not the growing that's the hard part. It's the after that.
Sure, yeah.
Post-harvest.
Yeah, absolutely. That,
which is the most important.
Yeah.
If you can't cure it and dry it in a good spot, and you make the people that you live with upset because it smells like weed in your house. It's just not, doesn't really work. So,
I feel you.
And being in Denver, it's so cheap here. It's everywhere. The market is flooded. So just not really worth my time.
Yeah. I feel that. But I think you told me that eventually, ideally, you would like to specialize in and have your own property in your own greenhouses.
Someday. Yeah, that's, I think, a long-term goal. And then especially with what I'm doing, you can take advantage of taxes that way. And it all kind of ends up being ran similar to a farm for most zoning eyes. And so if you can treat it like that, you know, you get a lot of those loophole benefits where you can live on the property and kind of do whatever.
Yeah, man.
In a sense. And Denver's cool because there's a lot of areas here where you're in Denver, but you look around and you're like, am I really in Denver? I don't think I'm in the city. But you're 20 minutes from downtown. So that's one nice thing about being here.
Yeah. Yeah. I need access to the city too. I don't know that I'm ready to go full secluded.
It's nice to have it when you want to experience it.
Yeah.
I'm not cut out to live in downtown Denver. I've realized that, but you know, it's nice going in and visiting every now and again. Driving by and waving. Hi.
You guys got some good dance music culture, right?
We do. I'm biased, but I would say it's probably the best in the United States.
Did you hear that, LA?
Yeah. To have Red Rocks at your immediate access, Fiddler's Green. We have the Mish out in the mountains. Mission Ballroom is here. It's like, if I went to all the concerts I wanted to go to, I would starve. That is how much comes through here. So
yeah.
It's nice. We get all the big names that, especially in electronic music, that will only hit LA and New York, and then they'll always make stop in Denver too. So I see we have Worship, D&B Group, Sub Focus, and Culture Shock, and Dimension 1991. I'm forgetting a couple others. They're in the United States. I think they're only playing in a couple of cities, and you know they're making a stop here. So,
yeah, man. Well, venue-wise, for sure, you guys got it going on. I like the nature venues, for sure. We don't got any of that. We're like sweaty warehouses, yeah. You know, wet walls.
Those have their place, too.
Sure. Yeah.
Have you been DJing lately?
I haven't DJed in a long time, but you know, 3-year-old child, I had my heyday, and it's like riding a bike. It'll never leave, you know. I can always do it, and it'll always be there, similar to the plants. And that's, I mean, something I would like to do is get a little more active in things like that, surfing, snowboarding. Do you do any snowboarding out there?
I do, yeah. I just went out the other day.
Nice. How was it?
The season. It was good. We had a nice storm the night before, and then it was pretty windy throughout the night. So I was able to go out on a Sunday, and it wasn't totally rutted out. Still had a nice top to it. They went out to Winter Park. They opened a good chunk of the mountain up the day I was out there. So got a few early season laps in. And I mean, it's the best is yet to come in about a month and a half. So just trying to not go full send and hurt myself again like I did last year.
What happened?
I broke my collarbone.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. It was pretty bad timing because it was like, by the time I was getting out of the sling, I was starting spring hanging basket and patio pot season. So I'm like trying to stick plugs in pots like as fast as humanly possible so that we're not putting a whole bunch of labor into it. And, you know, when you only have one hand, it doesn't go quite as fast.
Yeah, man. Is that one of those things that has to heal itself like a rib?
They'll plate it if it's bad, but if it's not bad enough, then they won't. I was I was lucky and I didn't have to have surgery. Doesn't feel like it did before, but
Sure.
I'm back to climbing and boarding went well the other day, so
nice, man.
I'm feeling good.
So yeah, rock climbing, right? You're a big rock climber?
Yeah, I wouldn't say big. I'm pretty casual about it. I like to hit the gyms, and I'm more of a boulder. It's a little lower commitment for me. It's nice being able to just walk into the gym, you look at the wall, and you have 30 different things that you can climb within, 50 feet of each other, versus when you go outside, you got to lug your pad, usually a mile. It's hard to find the boulders. It's all. And then there's usually just like one or two climbs that you can do on an individual boulder. So it's fun to do that every now and again, but to just be able to walk into a gym and have as many as we have in Denver is pretty cool.
Is it like meditative for you? Do you find it to be grounding?
I do, yeah. I feel, sounds weird to say, but I feel very in touch with my body.
No, that makes sense.
When I'm climbing, especially if you can get in that flow state where you're like really climbing well, or you're just in the zone working on something, that's really nice.
Wicked, man. Dude, you seem to have been doing a lot of inner work, because I even just in our interaction, I sense a different energy about you. I don't know when that was when we talked last. When was that?
It was summer. It was right before, I think it was like August time. Probably right after the cactus show.
No, oh, yeah.
In Colorado. Probably a big thing for me is I'm on today that we're recording. This is day 102, no alcohol.
Congratulations, my friend.
Thank you. It's been a big positive change in my life. A lot of good things have happened by not continuing to drink, or at least like, I don't know that I won't not drink forever.
Sure.
But to take a step back, and I mean, after this period, I realized that how much it was in my life leading up to, these last couple months. So trying to enter my 30s and clear away some of the stuff and the bullshit from the 20s. I think that's something you can probably relate to a bit as well.
100%, man. Yeah, someone was explaining on social media the other day, like, our bodies have to adjust to you're basically ingesting poison, and when you're putting that in your body has to adjust to taking it, and when you remove it, you realize how much it was doing to you. You know, even if it's just even if it's just like, I'm having a couple of drinks a day, your body still has to adapt to you putting that foreign substance in there. And then once you remove yourself from that situation long enough, and you're able to return to it with that perspective, and realizing what is a healthy amount and a healthy, perhaps reason, celebratory, ceremonial, some things like that, then you're able to enjoy it without the consequences, you know?
Yeah. And I'm realizing that alcohol for me was more coping than fun.
Sure.
And so learning those healthy coping strategies and how to, sit with your feelings and address things instead of just disassociate.
Yeah, man. And I'm sure you do things better too, even garden better, even climb better, snowboarding,
Yeah.
All
yeah,
of that.
I notice a big change in the work quality, how much I've gotten accomplished, even in this greenhouse. That's just, I don't think it would have happened had I not given it up.
Winter's a hard time to get through too, especially if you are used to using something to cope, you know, with the holidays and family and just it's not as lively of a time of year, especially for somebody gardening. I know you still have your work cut out for you, but my hat's off to anyone that makes it through winter without without drinking or using some kind of.
I feel for the people that have to sit in front of a computer all day all
Sure.
winter, and you know, especially you go north of here and it's getting dark at 3:45 in the afternoon.
Wow.
In South Dakota, it's, you know, it's mid afternoon when the sun starts to set and the
Wow.
light quality drops really quick. So I feel for those people that don't. I mean, I'm basically outside all day.
Yeah.
I've got sunlight every day, so it's a little bit easier.
Yeah.
I think I would really struggle if I was actually indoors and not in a greenhouse.
Yeah. Well, at least you know you're not vitamin D deficient.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. I think everybody is a little bit.
Sure. Well, hey, man, this has been awesome. And I'm really glad that we got to do the tour. And I think the viewers will enjoy that too.
Yeah, I hope they do. If anybody has questions on stuff, they can always shoot me a message. I love talking plants with people and connecting with new people. If you have a specialty plant that you're interested in that you want to share, I'm always looking for new things to add to the collection and to be able to distribute to our customers here. So, yeah.
Yeah, hit Tate up for some of those Siphostemmas
Yeah, please take my
that
Karoorii
he's trying to get rid of. All right, man. Cool. Your shout out to Front Range Gardens, Green Minded on Instagram as well. And
Yes.
I'll plug links to both of those things. Anything else to plug? Events?
Emerald Leaf, High Country Roses are on site too,
Cool.
but I think those are the main ones.
Cool. All right. Tate Griebel, everyone of Green Minded.
Thanks, Garrett.
Thanks, brother. If everyone could please like, review, and subscribe to the podcast and hit that share button, we would both appreciate that greatly. Peace.